Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on lying deceivers when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it, and a Budweiser six-pack is taxed 43%. A fifth of Jack Daniels has a 72% tax on it. You know, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government is doing to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Why is it that government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? If you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our pre-general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Well, last time we were talking about food, there's another aspect of food over here that's also a lying deception. It has to do with eating meat. There's about 6 million people in America, maybe more by now, that are vegetarians. And most of these vegetarians go to the Bible, if you can believe that, go to the Bible to support their thinking or their theory on eating or not eating, in this case, not eating meat. That's as phony as a $3 FedNut. Some vegetarians will argue, well, the meat is unhealthy because of the way it's produced, and they've got a good argument there. You know, if you're talking about Downer cow syndrome and mad cow disease and bypass protein, I think they've got a good argument. That doesn't make the case for vegetarianism. That makes the case for not eating contaminated meat. I mean, let's be intelligent about this. You know, if we knew, as an example, that the broccoli, which we just had some here recently, broccoli was contaminated with salmonella, would you come to the conclusion that eating vegetables is bad for you and therefore we shouldn't eat vegetables? Well, that's the conclusion that they've come to concerning meat. You know, that since some meat is contaminated, has mad cow disease, we shouldn't eat meat, we should be vegetarians. I think that's stupid. And I don't say it's just unreasonable, I'm just stupid. Now, the other argument that the Bible supports the theory of vegetarianism, I've only been able to find one place. I've asked vegetarians this many times, can you tell me where in the Bible? And they always turn to Genesis 1, 29, and 30. Is there any place else in the Bible that supports your argument? I have yet to find anybody that's got another vegetarian argument from any other section of Scripture. Let me read these two verses to you, and then you tell me, what in the hell does that have to do with vegetarianism? Listen to this. In verse 29, it says, and God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree, yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. They take those two verses, right there, that's it, and they say, see, before the flood, those people were vegetarians, and that we should be vegetarians. Well, first of all, they weren't vegetarians before the flood. They were keepers of sheep and cattle. Now, if they were keepers of sheep and cattle, the question arises, well, what in the hell were they doing with them? I'm a cattleman. I have sheep and cattle. Do you think that I'm keeping sheep and cattle and I'm not going to sell them, not going to eat them? Besides that, men were sinners before the flood. If eating meat is a sin, you can rest assured that men were eating meat. They wouldn't miss the opportunity to stick it in God's face now, would they? All right, so now it may well be that vegetarianism before the flood or before the fall or, you know, in the Garden of Eden might have been the routine. But it wasn't the routine at the time of Moses when he wrote Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. And the Messiah, that's Jesus himself, was not a vegetarian. He obeyed all of the law, all of the time, and that meant that at least one time in the year, one day, on the Passover day, he ate at least one bite of that Passover lamb, because that's what the law requires. Otherwise, you haven't got a Savior. I mean, that's where reality's at. Now, if you want to be a vegetarian 364 days a year and you want to eat meat one day a year, you will not be in violation of any law in the scripture. But there's no such thing as a vegetarian who practices the law of God. The law of God requires that you eat meat. Furthermore, in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14, God comes on the scene. He says, now listen, here's the meat I want you to eat, and here's the meat I don't want you to eat. And so he delineates between the two. He says, eat this, but don't eat that. So today, we predominantly eat the unclean meats along with the meats that are clean. Now that's in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. But William Campbell Douglas wrote a chapter here on Let Them Eat Steak. Because up in the northern, you know, regions, up in the Arctic, the people up there ate primarily meat. They don't grow much in the way of vegetables and fruits up there on the Arctic Ocean where the Eskimos live. So how do the Eskimos live up there on a virtually 100% meat diet? You know, that was quite a little story. And it's in here in the book. It's in the book, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. Well, listen to this story here, and let's take a look at this deception, because the scripture and science will prove that vegetarianism is a doctrine of devils. It's a doctrine of demons. It doesn't come from the scripture. He says, if you're one of the 6 million American vegetarians reading this book, you're not going to like this part, so if you're sensitive, just skip over to page 230. The anti-red meat vegetarians say that most meat is contaminated, and they're probably right, but so are vegetables. Yes, the vegetarians say, but one can wash the contaminants off the vegetables and fruits, and you can't with red meat. Now, what these vegetarians seem to forget is that a great deal of the insecticides that are sprayed on plants goes into the soil. It's then taken up within the tissues of the plant, and you can't wash that away either. Now, at least the animal has a liver to detoxify poisons. Plants don't, so why pick on red meat? Now, that's a pretty good argument of them by itself. It's not necessarily conclusive, but it's a pretty good argument. Now, Douglas does not make any distinction here between clean and unclean meats in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. I think that's an error. But even so, you got to hand it to the Eskimos. You know, those Eskimos are up there eating fat, eating blood, eating whale and walrus and et cetera. And they don't eat vegetables. Now, let's take a look at that. At the Douglas Center, we assume that everything is contaminated. So we put all of our patients on a purified garlic preparation that neutralizes many contaminants. For further protection, we use a lot of vitamin E and vitamin C. Now, periodically, America goes through an anti-meat, anti-fat crusade. In 1926, a small but very vociferous group proclaimed that meat and fat caused kidney disease, arthritis, and high blood pressure. Part of that was undoubtedly the continuing puritanical concept in our country that anything as good-tasting as meat or fat must be bad for you. But the explorer Stephenson's experiments with meat and fat in the Arctic, which we will describe subsequently, wrote a new chapter in nutrition. You see, a lot of brilliant theories against meat faded into nothingness. 60 years later, the anti-meat doomsayers are at it again. So I'm tired of vegetarians telling me that the Bible says don't eat meat, because there are at least a dozen references in the Bible advocating the eating of meat and the fat of meat. I'm going to underline that. I don't think that there's any place in the Bible that advocates the eating of fat. In fact, there are two statutes, correct Mr. Douglas here, two statutes that prohibit eating blood or fat in the Bible. The Bible doesn't prohibit eating meat. It prohibits eating certain kinds of meat. It prohibits fat and prohibits blood. And in Leviticus 3, verse 17, for instance, you shall eat neither fat nor blood. So, Mr. Douglas, you've made an error here. The eating of meat is prescribed in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. And many passages in the Scripture support eating meat. You're right about that. Now, they're in Appendix 6, and I'll quote one extremely interesting passage from Timothy 1, because you probably won't look at the appendix. So in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1. Now, the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meats, which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. So there are meats that are commanded by God to be eaten. You know, let me give you an illustration. I told you where it's at. Write it down, Mary, so that when Bob comes in tonight, you'll have it for him. It's in Leviticus chapter 11. Let's flip over there quickly. Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. And in Leviticus 11 it says, these shall you eat at all that are in the waters. Whatsoever has fins and scales in the waters and the seas and in the rivers, them shall you eat. Okay? And it says so also about meat. You know, he says, these are they which you shall have in abomination among the fowls, they shall not be eaten, they are an abomination. So, of birds, the birds that you should not eat are eagles, ossifrage, osprey, vultures, and kites. ravens, owls, nighthawks, cuckoos, and hawks, little owls, swans, mud hens, pelicans, gear eagles, storks, herons, lapwings, and bats. So he says, don't eat those. Now, Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 were written by Moses at Mount Sinai or in the environs thereof. And he told us to eat these meats, but don't eat those meats. Now, of course, today, those meats that he told us not to eat, we're busy out here eating. And then we wonder why we get sick or why we have disease and one thing and another. Now, from Campbell's point of view, and he hit the nail on the head there when he said that 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, I believe that is, and tells you very plainly there that there would be vegetarians running around here with this false doctrine. In fact, he goes a step further. He says, this is a doctrine of devils. This is a doctrine of Satan. This is a doctrine of demons, this vegetarianism. It's false doctrine. On the other hand, these same people go over here to Genesis 1, 29 and 30 and say, see, this supports our theory that God wants us to be vegetarians. Let me ask you this. Let's suppose that I've got a car lot here, and you come onto the lot, and I say, behold, I give you every motorcycle on this lot to drive. And maybe on the lot there's 5 or 6 motorcycles, 25 cars, 15 pickups, and 5 big trucks. Now listen to the words again. I say, behold, I have given you every motorcycle on this lot to drive. Would you conclude from that that I'm prohibiting you from driving the cars, pickups, and trucks? I haven't even mentioned them. Not even a part of the conversation. I didn't tell you not to drive them. I didn't tell you to drive them. What I specifically said was that I've given you every motorcycle. So the statement in Genesis 1, 29 and 30 is a lying deception on the part of vegetarians who say, see, here's where God tells us to be vegetarians. That's a lie. It never said one way or the other that you couldn't drive the car. It's not part of the conversation. Later on, in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14, he specifically addresses cars, pickups, and trucks. And with specificity, as I just read to you, he says, for instance, when it comes to birds, these are the birds you shall not eat. I might say, and of all of the motor vehicles on this lot, you shall not drive pickups. Oh, okay. Now that tells us with specificity then that we can't drive any of the pickups. Now God did not tell us not to eat all birds. He just said some birds don't eat. Other birds like chicken, turkey, grouse, you know, all songbirds, all birds that have 3 toes forward and 1 back and sing a song and have a crop you can eat. And all the rest of them you can't. Same thing with animals. You know, if you've got a giraffe, you know, a giraffe chews its cud and it has a cloven hoof. They're clean to eat. Cows, sheep, goats, they're all clean. Now, animals that are unclean, things like pigs, rabbits, squirrels, rats, those are prohibited. Just that simple. Now, you probably are having disease problems from eating pork. Now, God told us not to eat pig, and so we're out here with Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage, and by God, we're going to eat pig, and we're going to mix 50% fat with it, so we're going to eat fat and pig. Well, okay. Now, God told you not to do that. And what do we hear here from business? Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage. What do we hear from government? Well, that pig's good for you. Well, okay. You know, I'm not here to tell you not to eat pig. I'm just here to tell you it's a lying deception. And there's a consequence that comes from that. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. When you break the law, there'll be an outcome. And when you get the outcome, if you like the outcome you're getting, stick with it. Now, the reason that we want to sell a lot of pig and we want to sell a lot of fat is because there's money in it. And I showed you that in the last program talking about ice cream, for instance. You know, the bottom line here isn't money. And advertising of it by itself is a lie. I mean, that's just the way it's designed. It's the way the thing works. Now, if we take a look here at meat, and then we come to the conclusion that all meat, you know, should not be eaten, that's vegetarianism, that's a doctrine of devils. Campbell Douglas hit the nail right on the head. But listen to this. According to anthropologists, man was a meat eater long before he took up Caesar's salad. And if you think man ascended from the ape, then there is further proof that humans have always been carnivorous. And it's always been assumed that primates were strictly vegetarians. Nothing could be further from the truth. Jane Goodall studied apes in their natural habitat, and she discovered that they eat meat on a regular basis. Baboons eat vervet monkeys and other small animals. Chimpanzees eat small baboons, and they love it. The National Zoo in Washington attempted to breed Amazonian monkeys. They were fed a totally fruit diet. Total fruit. Nothing happened. Within weeks of feeding meat to the monkeys, normal mating took place and many healthy babies were born. An interesting aside about lions, although they're definitely carnivorous, they're choosy. They seldom attack and eat humans. Even little humans. Leakey's observed lions walking through his camp at night sniffing at humans asleep. They could have easily attacked and eaten them, but they would sniff and walk away, apparently not liking the smell of humans. Archaeological studies have shown that Cro-Magnon man ate bear, lion, hyenas, wild horse, and the woolly rhinoceros. In America, the Paleolithic Homo sapiens ate the wolf, beaver, and American camel. In China, Peking man was found to have lunched on camel, deer, elephant, and ostrich. Neanderthals not only ate the woolly rhinoceros, but the 12-foot arc as well. And there's no society in the world that's entirely vegetarian. The Hindus of India come the closest. Dr. H. Leon Abrams reports on India, the greater percentage of the population who subsist almost entirely on vegetable foods suffer from kwashniorkor and other forms of malnutrition, and they have the shortest lifespans in the world. Shortest lifespans in the world come from Hindus that are on the strictest vegetarian diet. Now, there are a lot of vegetarian countries, but none of them seem to accomplish much. The Aztecs were carnivorous also. They ate each other. And by the beginning of the 16th century, they were butchering 250,000 men a year. They would rip out his heart, then butcher and eat the rest of it. During the entire Paleolithic period, man spent most of his time looking for meat. And according to Johnson, humans have been on Earth for at least 3 to 4 million years. And Abrams says that for all of that time, the last 10,000 years or over 99% of this time span, man is exclusively a meat eater except for the gathering of fruits, and that's when they were available. So don't believe that stuff about primitive man being a veggie. The Australopithecines would laugh in your face. Is today's human so different that he can thrive on fruits and vegetables where Cro-Magnon man and the ancient Egyptians couldn't? Maybe we should take a closer look at the modern vegetarian. If you're tired of this and convinced that you should drink raw milk or eat some other form of animal protein, just skip on over to page 230. If not, read on. You see, the diets of 119 strict vegetarians and 80 households in Israel were studied at the Hebrew University. And all of these vegetarians were deficient in the essential amino acids, methionine and tryptophan. Babies fed a strict vegetarian diet, meaning, of course, no milk, but just fruits and vegetables, do not grow at a normal rate. They get shortchanged on B12, folic acid, zinc, calories, proteins, calcium, and riboflavin B2. Even a breastfed baby may become malnourished if the mother has been a true vegetarian for any number of years. The Seventh-day Adventists are often cited as a good example of why you shouldn't eat meat. They have much less heart disease and cancer. But they eat plenty of dairy products and eggs, and they don't use tobacco, alcohol, coffee, tea, or cola beverages. Puerto Ricans, unlike the Seventh-day Adventists, eat huge amounts of pork, yet they have a very low rate of colon cancer and breast cancer. Now, in case you read that last, don't get me wrong, I have nothing against Seventh-day Adventists, and I'm not advocating eating pig. Eggs have been catching it, too, because of their high cholesterol content. And we've said a lot about cholesterol, but we can't stop without mentioning the findings of famous heart surgeon Michael DeBakey. He analyzed 1,700 patients with hardening of the arteries and found that there was no correlation between blood cholesterol levels and the degree of atherosclerosis. The prestigious New England Journal of Medicine had a report on eggs and cholesterol. A group of New Guinea natives whose diet is exceedingly low in cholesterol were fed eggs to measure the cholesterol-raising effect of eggs. They figured the serum cholesterol levels would be blown off the charts. But the eggs had no significant effect on the blood cholesterol of these natives from New Guinea. Another study done by the American Cancer Society revealed that non-egg users had a higher death rate from heart attacks and strokes than egg eaters. This was a very large and convincing study involving 800,000 people. After a heart attack, the cardiologist will inevitably place the patient on a low cholesterol, low fat diet, thus making him even more miserable. This type of diet is delicious to grazing animals, but not to omnivorous humans. The Medical Research Council of Great Britain in 1968 did a study in which the fate of patients put on a low saturated fat diet after a heart attack was determined and compared to patients who were put on a high saturated fat diet. And they concluded that the unsaturated fat diet had no effect on the ultimate course of the patient's health. The number of second heart attacks and deaths were the same in both groups. Two other studies, one done in Oslo, Norway, and one in England, came to the same conclusion. Professor H. Leon Abrams sums it up this way. He said, "Anyone who deliberately avoids cholesterol in his diet may be inadvertently courting heart disease." Abrams also pointed out that meat, being a much more concentrated protein than plant protein, requires two-thirds less time to eat and requires much less time to prepare. He said by eating as much meat as they could, the Australopithecines had more free time. A few more hits on the vegetarians and then we'll move on. Tooth decay isn't caused entirely by drinking pasteurized milk and eating sugar. A strictly vegetarian diet will do that also. Throughout the Paleolithic period, when humans subsisted primarily on meat, tooth decay was a rarity. As humans went agricultural, tooth decay increased. Eskimos and Icelanders are more recent examples. The Eskimos, who are aboriginal, and the Icelanders, who are European, remained free of cavities until they abandoned their fish and meat diets. The director of the National Museum in Iceland says that it's definitely established that during 600 years, from 1200 to 1800 in Iceland, there were no dental cavities. The foods that the people ate were milk and milk products, mutton, beef, and fish. They ate little or no carbohydrates. The only exception to this was a little moss soup in the summer, but this was a rare fun food, a little nutritional importance. Two Indian tribes reveal the same thing. The prehistoric Indians of California were vegetarians, unlike most folks of that period, and they had tooth decay. In contrast, the Sioux Indians lived on buffalo meat and were totally devoid of tooth decay. The Pueblo Indians worshiped the corn god, but he was not grateful. They have the most wretched teeth of all of the American Indian tribes. They live on corn, squash, and beans. And they have the worst dental cavity problem of all of the ancient Indians in America. Now, the Laplanders, who ate mostly reindeer meat, during the 18th century, rarely had cavities. Modern Laps have a decay rate of 85% of their teeth. Modern Laplanders eat more vegetables today than in their history. The most overrated profession today, except doctors in general, is probably dental hygiene, and the biggest waste of money is toothpaste, unless you add dental floss and toothbrushes and water picks to it. Stephenson puts the case very colorfully. Teeth, superior on the average to those of the presidents of our largest toothpaste companies, are found in the world today, and they have existed during past ages, among people who violate every precept of current dentifrice advertising. Now, let's pause here for a moment and think about that. Weren't you taught when you were a little kid and you went to school that you had to brush your teeth three times a day? That's what they told us. Oh, now you got to brush your teeth three times a day. Huh? Brush your teeth three times a day, go to the dentist twice a year, and that'll eliminate tooth decay. I did that for many, many years. It didn't eliminate tooth decay for me. Now, I did all those things just like you did. And this doctor here, William Campbell Douglas, is pointing out the same thing. Boys and girls, I've been in the cattle business for many years. I have never seen a cow, a horse, a sheep, or a goat with tooth decay. Not one. Furthermore, I've never seen a cow, a horse, a goat, or a sheep brush his teeth or use dental floss nor own a toothbrush. Not one. Now, that should tell us something about deception here. We go to school and they tell us that we need to brush our teeth and we need to floss and we need to go to the dentist twice a year. And we do that. We were taught to do that and we all did it. But our teeth all rotted out of our heads. But the dentist didn't say, now if you come to me twice a year and you brush your teeth three times a day, you'll never have a tooth decay. But that was the implication that he gave us. Isn't it? I mean, it's the same thing here with pure and natural. You know, when we see natural, we think no additives. This is natural. This is the way it came out of the ground. This is the way it's produced. No. They put natural on all kinds of foods that are processed. It's not natural at all. It's totally unnatural. It's the exact opposite. Now, we find, looking at ancient bodies, you know, we dig up these skeletons and we find evidence of what these people eat, and we find that people that lived in Iceland and just ate meat had no tooth decay. Modern Icelanders today, they eat meat and vegetables and sugar and drink soda pop and so on, and their teeth rot out. So in the period from 1200 to 1800, their teeth didn't rot out, but they weren't eating what we're eating today, and they were meat eaters. So the vegetarians, you know, they've got their thing in life, and they come along and they say, well, here's A, B, and C, but that's not true. The Bible does not teach vegetarianism, and Genesis 1, 29, and 30 is not a vegetarian statute. Read it yourself. Just go read those two verses. It does not tell you not to eat meat. Meat is not the subject matter of the two verses. Vegetables are. He says, I've given you all of these things to eat. God has said, corn's good for you, broccoli's good for you, all these vegetables are good for you, and the fruits are good for you. I'm not taking those away from you. It doesn't address the subject of meat until we get to Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. Then when he gets to the subject of meat, he tells you very plainly, eat these meats. Eat meat that comes from an animal that chews its cud and has a cloven hoof. Eat that. And if it doesn't chew its cud and doesn't have cloven hooves, don't eat that. Now, that's where you get instruction on eating meat. Now, there's instruction in the Bible, but it's not the instruction you're getting from the preacher or the vegetarian or from the meat producers or the government or the college professors. All of those people are lying hypocrites. And furthermore, they know better. This doctor, this William Campbell Douglas, is simply telling you some scientific evidence and information. It's available to any and everybody. He's not the only guy in the world that sees this, but what we, you and I, the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, are fed a constant diet of is advertising. We listen to Katie Couric, and they've got a health section, and they bring some doctor in there and says, oh my God, this stuff here causes cancer and these diseases, and it's carcinogenic, or if you eat this, you know, I remember years ago, it said, if you'll stop eating eggs, you'll stop having heart attacks, and so we got off eggs. Eggs didn't have anything to do with heart attacks. So the people that are selling their product, and you're eating eggs, and they're going to sell you away from eggs, and they want to sell you into eating their products. And it typically has to do with money, almost always money. If not, it'll have to do with religion or politics. There's going to be an agenda behind it. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at a book here. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. There's a chapter in here on meat and vegetarianism, and it's written by William Campbell Douglas. It's a dynamite book. If it was $100, it'd be cheap at double the price, but it's probably about $20, maybe $30. I don't know where to get one. This one here that I've got is pretty old, 1980. You can probably get one directly from Campbell Douglas and his website. He's publishing this book again, somebody told me the other day. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas, and if you'll do a search, an internet search, I think you'll find his website. Use that name, William Campbell Douglas, M.D. He has a website. He's written more than just this one book, but I'm recommending this one right here. All right, now going on with meat, he says, the best teeth and the healthiest mouths were found among people who never drank milk, since they ceased to be sucking babes and who never in their lives tasted or tested any other things which we usually recommend for sound teeth. They never took any pains to cleanse their teeth or mouths. They did not visit their dentist twice a year or even once in a lifetime. And so far as an extensive correspondence with authorities has yet been able to show, a complete absence of tooth decay from entire populations has never existed in the past and does not exist now, except where meat is either exclusively or heavily predominant in the diet. Now, did you get that? That paragraph. There's a society of people over here that have 100% perfect teeth and never drink milk and don't eat vegetables. If you feel weak on a pure vegetarian diet, I'll tell you why. Venison, deer meat, contains 572 calories per 100 grams of weight. 100 grams of fruit or vegetables only contains 100 calories. In other words, you have to eat almost 6 times more by weight if you're strictly a vegetarian. Now, some vegetarians condemn meat because it contains cadaverine, but we now know that this misnamed substance is not only harmless but essential to normal function of your brain and the rest of your nervous system. Remember that we're not criticizing vegetarians, but only the purists who eat no form of animal protein. They don't eat milk, eggs, cheese, beef, fish. They're called vegans. Now, you don't have to eat red meat. It's just silly not to. If you have religious prohibitions against meat, then you must eat eggs, cheese, and milk. The overemphasis of unsaturated fats in the American diet, and vegetarians particularly, may lead to a brand new disease epidemic in the next 10 or 20 years. It's called ceroid storage disease. Ceroid is a wax-like pigment that is formed from the beating of unsaturated fatty acids, and it's called polymerization, and you may polymerize yourself to an early grave if you get too fanatic about vegetarianism. So let's look at a typical case of this new disease. A young man came to the emergency room complaining of bellyache. The operation revealed a spleen filled with ceroid. His history was interesting. He had been fed soybean milk as an infant. As an adult, he followed a strict vegetarian diet for religious reasons. This diet consisted of soybean and wheat protein cooked in corn and Wesson oil, a perfect setup for ceroid storage disease. As pure vegetarianism becomes more popular, ceroid storage disease may become more common. Research at the University of Georgia on various fats helped to exonerate red meat. They found that adding stearate fat from animals to the diet of rats lowered their cholesterol levels. Vegetable fats had no effect, and that stearate also lowered blood pressure. The observations of the great explorer Stephenson on raw meat and raw fish as a complete diet are pertinent to our subject. His findings are totally opposite to modern nutritional thinking. Now, here's what Stephenson said. In 1906, I went to the Arctic with the food tastes and beliefs of the average American. By 1918, after 11 years as an Eskimo among the Eskimos, I had learned things which caused me to shed most of those beliefs. Stephenson cataloged the dietary truths of 1935, which are still believed to be true today by practically all schools of nutrition. And that is, to be healthy, you need a varied diet composed of elements from both the animal and vegetable kingdoms. Eating the same thing daily for a prolonged period causes revulsion against that food. One must eat fruit for a balanced diet, and one must eat vegetables for a balanced diet. Nuts and coarse grains are necessary. Certain harmful bacteria will flourish in the intestine if you eat too much meat. The less meat you eat, the better. It'll cause arthritis, hardening of the arteries, high blood pressure, and a calcium deficiency. You should, in fact, be a vegetarian, and without fruits or vegetables, especially fruits, you will get scurvy. Men cannot live on meat alone, and your kidneys will stop working. Now, these are the standard medical and vegetarian arguments that were used up to 1935. Right now, Stephenson proved that all of these views are totally incorrect. And then he ridiculed them, especially the prohibition on eating meat. There would be protein poisoning and, in general, hell to pay, he said, with tongue in cheek. Now, living with various Eskimo tribes, Stephenson ate raw fish for breakfast, raw fish for lunch, and boiled fish for dinner. He became quite fond of this one food diet and even learned to eat the greatest of Eskimo delicacies, that's raw, rotten fish. About the fourth month of my first Eskimo winter, he remarked, I was looking forward to every meal, rotten or fresh. Now, civilized people eat decayed milk products. That's called sour cream. And decayed cheese, he said. So why not decayed fish? I tried rotten shark in Iceland. Once you get it past your nose, it tastes pretty good. On the north coast of Iceland, they still eat rotten eggs. In the old days, they ate rotten sheep heads. Stephenson lived on fish and water for a year, did not get scurvy, and in all, he lived in the Arctic for 5 years exclusively on fish and meat, mostly raw, and remained in perfect health. Whenever the men of the expedition were exposed to civilized cooking, they would get indigestion, headache, and feel miserable. In most cases, they would be happy to get back on their meat diet. Now, critics of Stephenson said that maybe it was okay in the frigid temperatures of the Arctic under extreme physical conditions, but one would certainly die eating nothing but meat under modern sedentary conditions. But the Institute of American Meatpackers believed in Stephenson and donated the funds, no strings attached, to authenticate or refute the explorer's amazing and completely unorthodox views on nutrition. So six prestigious institutions were represented on the scientific committee: the American Museum of Natural History, Cornell University Medical College, Harvard University, Johns Hopkins University, Russell Sage Institute of Pathology, and the University of Chicago. A meatpacker's representative and Stephenson were also on the committee. The study was directed by the dietetic ward of the Bellevue Hospital in New York City. Many vegetarians eat eggs and drink milk and still consider themselves vegetarians, although this is illogical. And Stephenson said he would also be illogical and exclude them, nothing but meat, period. One leading European authority assured the researchers very solemnly that the experiment would not last a week. He had tried the experiment himself, he said, and it was quite preposterous to think that a man could live on nothing but meat for a week, much less an entire year. Other scientists said that the two subjects, Stephenson and Carsten Anderson, another explorer, would die within 15 days of the onset of the experiment. Stephenson and Anderson thrived on the diet, winter and summer. Their stamina increased with the lengthening of the meat period. Stephenson remarked that he had never felt more energetic or optimistic. It's common knowledge that the Eskimos are the happiest people in the world when in their primitive state. Stephenson maintains that this may be due to their exclusively meat diet. Now, inexplicably, Stephenson became ill on the second day of the experiment. It was inexplicable to everyone but Stephenson. The critics were smirking. Stephenson had warned them that meat without fat was an incomplete food. After a few days of fat, sirloin, and brains fried in bacon fat, he was totally well again. And Stephenson warned, if yours is a meat diet, then you simply must have fat with your lean, otherwise you would sicken and die. Arctic tribes are connoisseurs of fats, the way civilized Westerners are connoisseurs of wines. The marrow of the long bones is considered the finest of delicacies, and also it is held in high esteem, or what is held in high esteem, is the fat around the kidneys and behind the eyeball. Contrary to what you have heard and what I was taught in medical school, you can eat polar bear liver about one time in six, according to Stephenson, and it'll give you a headache, but there's no record of man or beast dying from eating polar bear liver. Now, I use meat as a reducing diet in my practice, and I had one patient 5 feet tall who weighed well over 200 pounds to whom I suggested the all-meat diet. I didn't think that she believed me and would try the diet. When she returned to my office 3 months later, I didn't recognize her. She had lost well over 50 pounds and thought I was a magician. I found out years later that the DuPont Company had used a similar program on their executives with great success. Their diet was 70% fat and meat, with the other 30% for a small amount of baked potato, fresh fruit, or salad, and it was reported at the time. The reducing of the corpulent proved painless, even pleasant, and some said they were going to stick to the diet permanently. Now, Stephenson was overweight at the beginning of the all-meat diet, but quickly lost it. Eskimos, he pointed out, are never fat when left on their native diet of meat. And when you see Eskimos in their native garments, you do get the impression of fat round faces or fat round bodies, but the roundness of face is a racial peculiarity, and the rest of the effect is produced by loose and puffy garments. See them stripped, and you do not find the abdominal protuberances and folds that are so numerous at Coney Island beaches and so pervasive in arguments against nudism. Raw milk and kefir, in spite of their sugar and fat content, can also be used effectively for weight reduction. This method is more acceptable than the meat diet to most people, and so it's generally more successful. Now, although raw milk doesn't contain enough vitamin C, according to the U.S. government and nutrition experts, to supply the daily minimum needed, people on an undiluted raw milk diet do not get scurvy. And this is probably because of greater bioavailability of the vitamin C in raw milk. Or the natural vitamin C may be more potent, thus requiring less of it for good health. So Stephenson's study of Iceland confirms that milk and meat can keep you free of scurvy. Vitamin C deficiency, remember, is what causes scurvy and other diseases just as well as fruits and vegetables. So when the Irish discovered Ireland in 700 AD, they were forced onto a very strict diet of milk, milk products, and fish. Stephenson arrived 1,200 years later in 1905 to study the Icelanders, past and present. And he collected the bones and skulls from an abandoned medieval graveyard, and he took them to Harvard. These ancient people, who rarely, if ever, ate fruits and vegetables, showed no sign of scurvy. And doctors decided in the 18th century that fruits, especially limes, prevented and cured scurvy. Well, Dr. John Lind had tried to tell them this, but it took them 42 years to get the message. Then they went overboard, and they decided that if fruits prevent scurvy, then meat causes scurvy. Well, some of the scurvy stories are remarkable and pathetic. The prospectors in the Yukon Gold Rush often died, or the prospectors, rather, in the Yukon Gold Rush often died unnecessarily from vitamin C deficiency or scurvy. They would sicken near the end of the winter, having an abiding faith in raw potatoes as a cure for scurvy, and they do indeed contain vitamin C. The sick prospectors' comrades would often go to the heroic lengths to bring potatoes from great distances for their friends. Usually, they were too late. Now, the tragedy was that caribou milk, which was generally available, could have saved them with little effort. And also, they were walking on tons of vitamin C in the form of tundra grass, moss, and lichens. Now, although physicians of the 19th century had made up their minds that lime juice was the specific for scurvy, it constantly failed when put to severe tests. Sir George Nares returned from a polar expedition in 1876 to report that in spite of lime juice, they had had much scurvy and death. And the doctors, clinging to their lime juice theory, said that absence of sunlight and lack of amusement had nullified the good effects of the marvelous juice. Let me pause here and make a comment. You know, oftentimes we hear these stories or we go to school and we learn, you know, that the British sailors had to have limes, and that's why they called them limeys. Well, we know that vitamin C is the cause of scurvy. We know that limes have vitamin C, and now we learn something new. Up in the Arctic, the moss has vitamin C. The reindeer milk has vitamin C. And here's the way the Eskimos do it. See, they're eating the fat off of whales and walruses and seals and so on. And that fat stores these vitamins and minerals. That's where they're getting their vitamins and minerals, is from the fat. Now, while God tells us not to eat fat, don't do that. And those people who don't have limes in Barrow, Alaska, have to get their vitamin C from someplace if they're going to live there. So they get it from fat. Now, you can decide, you know, whether you want to eat fat or not. I'm not here to tell you. The Bible clearly tells us don't eat fat and don't eat unclean meat. Now, Genesis 1:29 and 30 tells you he gave you potatoes and corn and all the vegetables and fruits to eat. the problem that we really have here with the scripture is that we either want to go overboard in one direction or the other. When we eat meat, we're going to eat unclean meat along with fat and blood, or we're not going to eat any meat and we're going to eat vegetables and be vegetarians, and both of these extremes cause bad health. I don't know of very many people that ever sat down and said, why don't we just try to eat this biblical diet and see what happens? I see people on one extreme or the other, but I don't see people in the middle doing it God's way. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. So next time somebody tells you, you know, that the Bible is a vegetarian book, you tell them that's poppycock. Or when somebody says, hey, you can't live on fat. Oh, yeah, you can. Sure you can. God didn't tell you that you couldn't live on fat. He told you not to eat it. That's his food. He said, don't you eat that. That's for me. The fat we burn on the altar, the meat we eat. But the meat has to be clean meat. It has to be specific meat, not just anything. And then there's one more little caveat that goes in here. By feeding our animals this meat bypass protein, we've now made the meat polluted by making the cows, turning them into mad cows. You know, just leave it to us. If there's any way to screw it up, we'll do it. So with that in mind, tuck it away in your heart. Now, the book again, The Milk of Human Kindness Is Not Pasteurized, William Campbell Douglas. And you can probably get that off of his website. His website I don't have right in front of me, but it'll be something close to, you know, WilliamCampbellDouglasMD.com or something like that. If you do a Google search, I'm pretty sure you can find it. This is a book that deals with pasteurized milk versus raw milk. I know you've been told that if you drink raw milk, you will surely die. It's kind of like, if you eat meat, you will surely die. If you don't brush your teeth 3 times a day and go to the dentist twice a year, your teeth will rot out of your head. These are all lying deceptions, and the dentists know better, and so do the doctors, and so do the scientists, and so do the businessmen that are promoting these lies. These are lying deceivers. Nothing more, nothing less. All right, I'm out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, I'm out of time. There's the signal. It says I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.